Part 5. Violet Elizabeth's Special Party. Mrs. Bott was still trying to explain the situation to her husband.
Auntie Jo's been set on by four great men, Botty, and dragged into this house. Break a window, Botty, break a window. We've got to rescue her.
Well, them little diamond panes isn't easy to break, dear. And you can't do much when you broke them, said Mr. Bott. I don't know what to make of it all. I just don't.
Frankie Parsons' voice was heard again.
I want to go back to the party. Violet Elizabeth said there was birthday cake. I want some birthday cake. Want some birthday cake,
clamoured the chorus.
Want to go back to the party. Want to play Perfumer's Knock and Kiss in the Ring,
sobbed Violet Elizabeth.
Oh, Botty, oh, Botty, do something, do something,
said Mrs. Bott hysterically.
They mayn't have finished doing away with her yet. There may be time to stop them. I can't go to my grave with Auntie Jo's death on me hands. Hands. Poor, helpless old woman like that.
Aunt Jo, flanked by William and the outlaws, had been listening to all this from the attic window with mild amusement. But at the words, poor, helpless old woman, the smile dropped from her face.
Poor, helpless old woman, she echoed indignantly. I'll show her.
She seized one of the rotten apples from a shelf and flung it with unerring aim out of the window. It burst with a plop full in Mrs. Bott's face.
Oh, help! Help! Help!
Screamed Mrs. Bott.
The murderers have started on me now. Oh, do something, Botty.
Come on, men, said Aunt Jo gleefully. Let's give 'em the rest. She seized another apple and flung it down at Mr. Bott. It burst with a plop on his bald head and trickled down his face. He gave a yell that almost drowned his wife's screams. Abandoning all attempts at concealment, Aunt Jo and the outlaws hung out of the window, hurling rotten apples at the crowd below. They squelched on heads and shoulders, streamed down faces, bespattered party frocks and suits. The crowd below retaliated as best they could, hurling back stones and the remains of apples, which fell harmlessly against the wall of the house. Frankie Parsons' voice rose again in protest above the tumult.
I'm hungry, he cried. My mother will be coming for me soon, and I've not had any tea. Want to play those games? Perfumer's Knock, Kiss in the Ring. Want to play them now?
Came wafting up from below. Aunt Jo withdrew her head from the window.
The danger's over, she said. No time for kissing games now. We can safely make our way down.
Oh, can't we go on a bit longer? Said William wistfully.
Nope, said Aunt Jo. No, the party was from 3:30 to 6. Our object is accomplished. Our triumph won.
Reluctantly, they followed her down. She opened the front door and approached the group outside with a pleasant smile.
Oh, Auntie Jo!
Gasped Mrs. Bott. Yes, dear, said Aunt Jo innocently.
What have you been doing of?
Said Mrs. Bott in a quavering voice.
Oh, just looking over the house, dear. I've often thought I'd like a little house in the country. I got the key of this one from the house agent.
Aunt Jo took the key from her pocket and waved it carelessly.
And these four boys very kindly came along to help me. But it isn't really suitable. It's too large and very inconvenient. I'm afraid the inspection's taken rather longer than I thought it would.
But them apples,
spluttered Mrs. Bott. Aunt Jo drew her brows into a puzzled frown.
Apples? She said.
Apples? Then the frown cleared, and she smiled as at a sudden memory.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, apples. We were inspecting the attics, and we found them full of rotten apples. The smell was most unpleasant and unhygienic, so we decided to throw them away.
She looked at the apple-bespattered group with a glint of mischief in her eyes.
I'm so sorry if some of them happened to hit you. Well, shall we all go back home now?
She set off, walking briskly, flourishing her umbrella. The outlaws followed. Then came the rest of the party, clamouring urgently for its tea, with Violet Elizabeth clamouring urgently for those games.
Then came Mr. and Mrs. Bott, Mrs. Bott clinging to her husband and swaying in a somewhat tipsy manner as she walked along the path.
Oh, I'm all of a doodah, Botty, she moaned. I don't know whether I'm standing on me head or me heels. A head, Botty, is she mad or am I?
There's times, said Mr. Bott somberly, when I think everyone's mad. But don't you worry, love. It'll all come right in the end.
And me lovely old world party, with me lovely old world games, all gone down the drain. There won't be nothing about it in the newspaper now. I've been building me hopes on having the party in the paper, Botty. Hopes. I've always wanted to be in the newspaper, and try as I will, I never seem to bring it off. And me feet's that bad with all this traipsing about, I don't hardly know whether I'm coming or going.
You're coming, love, said Mr. Bott reassuringly. Lean on me.
I tell you what, Botty, I've been thinking.
Yes, love.
Mrs. Bott's air of pathos had left her.
Her face had darkened ominously.
I shouldn't be surprised, Botty, if that there William Brown isn't at the bottom of it all. He's at the bottom of everything that goes wrong in this here village.
Oh, but your Aunt Jo, she's a poor simple old woman, Botty. William Brown could twist her round his little finger.
She set her lips grimly. But I'll get the truth out of him. You see if I don't.
Tea had been laid in the dining room, and the guests had not waited for the arrival of their hostess. They formed a seething mass round the table, eagerly snatching sandwiches, cream cakes, chocolate biscuits, jellies, trifle. William, Ginger, Henry and Douglas had gone into a huddle over a chocolate mould, and were eating it from the dish with tablespoons. Violet Elizabeth was leaning over the table, picking the decorations from her cake and stuffing them into her mouth. Frankie Parsons had spread a sausage roll with strawberry jam and was eating it slowly with an air of wondrous relief. Carolina Jones was sitting under the table, drinking fruit salad from a large cut glass bowl. Cascades of fruit and juice fell from either side of her mouth onto her frock and the carpet, but still she was managing to make a fairly adequate meal. Aunt Jo stood in the window recess, surveying the scene with a sardonic smile. A pallid young man with a nervous expression hovered near the door. Mrs. Bott entered and threw a lowering glance round the room. It rested finally on the pallid young man.
"Who are you?" she said brusquely. "And what are you doing here?"
I'm from the Hadley Times," said the young man. "Mr. Petersham couldn't come, so he asked me to take his place. I've been watching proceedings..."
He gave a nervous smile.
"From a respectful distance, of course, all afternoon."
Mrs. Bott sat down, her face blank with dismay.
You mean you saw what happened?"
she gasped.
Yes.
He took a sheet of paper from his pocket.
I've written a somewhat hasty description of it. I'll make any alteration you care to suggest, of course. I'll read it to you, shall I?"
And before Mrs. Bott could protest, he unfolded the sheet of paper and began to read.
"An original children's party. Yesterday was Miss Violet Elizabeth Bott's birthday, and the affair was signalised at the hall by one of the most original children's parties that have ever taken place in the neighbourhood."
"Eh?"
breathed Mrs. Bott. The young man continued. "Mrs. Bott's first idea was to have an old-fashioned children's party with the old-fashioned games beloved of our great-grandparents. But before the momentous day dawned, another idea had flashed into the lady's fertile brain. Not for Mrs. Bott, a child at heart and a sportswoman if ever there was one, the conventional party, confined to house and garden. Mrs. Bott, a woman of extremely large..." Mrs. Bott flashed him a warning look. "Ideas," went on the young man, "conceived something on a more adventurous scale. The party was divided into two, and a grand game of hide-and-seek organised in a neighbouring wood. What fun there was, as the children tracked each other along the shady paths of the ancient wood, dodging in and out of the undergrowth, hiding behind the trunks of the old weather-beaten trees that must have seen so many
many generations of children frolicking in their shade.
Ooh, frolicking, breathed Mrs. Bott.
But even such a magnificent game can pull, and the resourceful Mrs. Bott had another card up her sleeve.
Oh, did I? Mrs. Bott managed to murmur as the young man plunged onwards.
The moment she saw the young guest flagging, another game, an even greater tribute to Mrs. Bott's fertile brain, was in full swing. The new game took the form of a siege. For this, the enterprising lady had borrowed an empty house.
Enterprising, you hear that, Botty?
Again, the young guests were divided into two parties. One was the besieged, the other the besiegers. And the fun raged fast and furious as they hurled harmless missiles at each other with peals of childish laughter. Finally, the besieged surrendered, and the little band, tired but happy, betook itself to the hall to tea. But not for Mrs. Bott, the stuffy ceremonial party tea, with children ranged orderly at the table in a depressing atmosphere of manners and decorum. Here again the fun raged fast and furious. It was, in the full sense of that oft-misused word, a bun fight. They ate what they wanted, how they wanted, where they wanted. Happy, if grubby, little faces beamed with joy as the table was lightened of its load of abundance. For Mrs. Bott had provided refreshments on a lavish scale, and her little guests did them ample justice. However, all good things come to an end. Parents arrived to collect their offspring, and one by one the little guests took their departure, carrying in their hearts a radiant memory that will live with them for many a day. Congratulations to Mrs. Bott on the most original children's party that this neighbourhood has ever seen. He raised his eyes from the paper to Mrs. Bott. Would you care to suggest any alterations? Mrs. Bott gasped and blinked. She opened and shut her mouth, but no words came.
I've rather anticipated the end of the party, of course, continued the young man. But, he glanced at his watch, I ought to be getting back to the office.
Suddenly Mrs. Bott found her voice.
Do you mean all that, what you've just read, will be in the newspaper?
Oh, yes, said the young man. Tomorrow, probably.
Mrs. Bott's plump, flushed face relaxed into a smile of ecstasy.
Crikey, she breathed. Well, I never. Oh, thank you ever so.
It's been a pleasure, Mrs. Bott, said the young man. A distinct pleasure.
Well, have a bit of something to eat before you go.
The young man glanced at the disordered table and food-scattered floor and repressed a shudder.
No, thank you so much, he said.
He threw her his nervous smile.
Well, goodbye.
He slid swiftly from the room, and they saw him pass the window as if in hurried flight. Mrs. Bott turned to her husband.
Well, she said, well, I'd never, Botty. Just think of it. Just think of everyone reading it in the newspaper. Do you know, I never tumbled to what was happening all that time. Happening. Hide and seek. And that there's siege.
She threw a puzzled glance round.
Whose idea was it? Was it yours, Auntie Jo?
Oh, I won't take all the credit, said Aunt Jo modestly. I'll share it with William.
Oh, William, said Mrs. Bott fervently. Oh, how I've misjudged you in my thoughts. And all the time you were planning this lovely party with sieges and whatnot that's going to be in the newspaper.
She approached him, beaming affectionately.
Well, I can only say thank you, William Brown, you dear little Boise, for making such a go of it all.
William lifted to her a face plastered from brow to chin with a large dollop of chocolate mould that Ginger had just thrown at him. His glassy smile gleamed faintly through the mask.
Want to play those games?
Sounded from the other end of the table. William
ignoring the plaintive, defeated voice, turned his most practised, imbecilic smile on Mrs. Bott.
"Oh, it's nothing. It's been a pleasure, Mrs. Bott," he said politely. "A stinked pleasure. Stinked."
And he turned to scoop a spoonful of jelly from a nearby dish and drop it neatly down Ginger's neck. Martin Jarvis was reading stories by Rich Moorcrompton. The director was Pete Atkin. Just William 10 is published by BBC Audiobooks.